Hello, everybody. Welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. I'm Terry Patton, the creator and host of this series, and for anyone who doesn't already know me, I'm also the founder and teacher of Integral Spiritual Practice, the author of Integral Life Practice with Ken Wilber, and also a book in progress entitled The Integral Revolution. I created this series to help advance the leading edge, the evolution of consciousness and culture by creating an ongoing public dialogue about how higher consciousness and spiritual practice can help human beings rise to the challenges of what's obviously a crisis time and to make as benign as possible a transition to a sustainable human presence on our planet. At this point, I've held over 50 profound, enlivening conversations on this topic with many of today's leading spiritual teachers and thought leaders. And once you've registered at beyondawakeningseries.com, they're all available for free download at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. This evening, I'm delighted to be joined by Thomas Hubel for a special broadcast event where we're going to continue that discussion in a conversation entitled Birthing a New We, Evolutionary Ways of Creating Community, Society, and Spirituality. The way this will work is that I will introduce Thomas, and then he and I will dialogue for about an hour. And then I'll make some announcements, and we'll spend another half hour or so taking your questions. So we'll finish up in about 90 minutes, but because this is a spontaneous and unfolding matter, it might be a little longer. It's not a strict schedule. Thomas Hubel is a fresh and original contemporary spiritual teacher who's catalyzed a tremendous spiritual and cultural opening in the German-speaking countries. His work teaches people what he calls spiritual competence, increased awareness and freedom in relation to the subtle animating energetics that create the gross world and everything we experience. His work includes shadow work in dialogue in real time, social action, not just outward, but inner cultural healing too. He's organized and led a series of large healing events in Germany focusing on the Holocaust and has brought together thousands of Germans with many Israelis, including Holocaust survivors, to face and acknowledge and heal the cultural shadow left by that horrible time. And this is an ongoing aspect of his work in Germany and Austria. He also spent significant time in Israel with his partner, a prominent Israeli artist, and his baby daughter. He embraces integral philosophy and is constantly in inquiry into what's next and what's unfolding, what's emerging in the field. And in that process, he and I have had a rich dialogue that is only going to continue today on the emergence and the birthing of a new we. He has a powerful, spacious presence that really opens a profoundly clear and deep and bright, subtle field and works to bring forth the enlightened potentials that are potential in that we, in the shared field that we're all in together. I had the pleasure of attending the Celebrate Life Festival about a year and a half ago in Oldenburg, Germany, where Thomas brought together over a 10-day period over 1,200 people in person to participate. It was a beautiful scene, a conscious mini Woodstock of the spirit. He's been able to catalyze the beginnings of a spiritual movement in the German-speaking countries. His Academy of Inner Science offers 3-year programs by application that teach not only personal transcendence, but also active responses to the contemporary challenges of the human condition. And over the past year, he's visited North America twice, well, 3 times now. He's just arrived again in New York City. Something I appreciate about Thomas is that although his field of presence is very strong and he uplifts and attracts people in a way that he could inhabit the dominant and immune role of the untouchable guru, he recognizes that this is a time when something very different is needed. So he willingly enters into a relationship in which his contributions open up and synergize with those of others. It's certainly been my experience in working with him. Every time we talk, we explore He's an authentic spiritual brother who's willing and able to ask and sit with difficult questions and rest in them with curiosity. So when we talk, we often find ourselves in a process of open-ended investigation. That's what happened in the dialogue we had a year and a half ago. We both very innocently just kind of opened together and probed the fertile edges of our own investigation of important questions. And I trust that's what's going to unfold tonight. So welcome, Thomas, to the United States and to Beyond Awakening.
Oh, thank you, Terry. What a beautiful introduction. Thank you. I'm sure that it will be a creative dialogue today or tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, as everyone who's with us right now, and even those who will be listening later, but who in a sense are right here right now listening through the recordings, there's a field that's beginning to create itself among you and me and everyone listening. And there, all of us have a shared intention. We're genuinely curious and we're open and we're together. And in some sense, we can feel this and we can participate in it consciously. And as someone who is amazingly tuned in and awake on the levels of these subtle fields and collective energies, it's so obvious when you open the field, when you're in a presentation room with a group, it's very beautiful. So I want to invite you to begin our call by helping to open all of us into awareness of the field that we're all sharing in this call, and help to invoke and optimize that field and prepare us to go deeper in the time we have together right now.
Okay, Terry. Okay, with pleasure. Yes, so maybe if we for a moment close our eyes if we want, and if not, then with open eyes. First you arrive where you're sitting and you see what's going on for yourself in your body, in your emotions, in your thoughts. And you take a couple of breaths and you drop into what is. Doesn't need to be changed. Sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's moved. And we just recognize. And just by the recognition, there is a kind of a spaciousness that appears. So when I look inside and I just say yes to whatever I find, there is more space, because a yes is more space. And I keep breathing and saying yes to how I'm sitting, how I'm listening, what I'm thinking. Allow my body sensations, my breath, my emotions, my thoughts to move. Because this is the nature. The nature is movement. And by allowing the movement of life to happen, we are joining a greater movement. So if I have more space inside myself, suddenly I can open myself to a wider context. And so, after recognizing the feelings, the thoughts, and the body sensations within myself, and the perceptions that I'm having, I expand my awareness into the field of all the people that are connecting right now, as Terry said, in this shared intention, to all the people that even will listen to this download later on. And I see if I can get a feeling of this field, what it means, a field, what it means that the space inside of me, between me and others, and the others, share the same spacious awareness, the same field of experience. And so I expand my awareness to a bigger and bigger radius, And I include all the people that are part of this talk. And I get a feeling of them. Because even if my mind says, how can I know how many people are there and who is listening, it doesn't matter. There is an underlying energy that knows. And I just, in a relaxed way, allow this to appear in myself, to appear as a perception. And by this, I'm also becoming aware of the intelligence of such a field, like the collective intelligence that I merge into. Like a joint movement. And then let us just listen as this joint movement, like a space that we share, and later on contribute to this joint space. And let's begin from here.
Thank you very much. So here we are. We are here talking with all of us, and in this we that already exists, that is, that you've just so beautifully invoked, this field of shared awareness, we're here to talk about birthing a new we. So someone new to this whole consideration might ask, but what's new about it? What is coming into being that hasn't existed before in the kind of we that is most interesting and alive today?
I think to answer this in one sentence would be that there is a possibility of a we arise that doesn't have them, that doesn't have the others. Most of the time we experience a we that is a collection of different eyes, of different separate individuals that share a common space, interest, alignment. And I believe what we can emerge into together is a we that doesn't have them or others outside of them. It's more a kind of a shared intelligence. It's a shared space of consciousness that we merge into if we are open enough, if we are clear enough, intense enough, if we are willing to let a higher purpose run through us and manifest it and participate. So, and I think there are different ingredients that in the current state of consciousness we, I think, need to practice in order to create the circumstances for something new to emerge, something new that we call, let's say, our future as a we, and our future also as individuals. And I think we need to be willing to do the experiment and do the practice. But if we do so, I think we will find out something that we even cannot really think about, because our current level of thinking is a limitation to the future. So if I want to practice something that I don't know, it will challenge me, because I don't know really where I'm going to. And if I give myself to this experiment, I can reveal another level of human consciousness. And I think we just can also talk tonight about the ingredients and the circumstances for something that is, I believe, unique on the planet. It's not something that is already a stable reality. So it's something that maybe people pop into for short times, and then it seems like we lose it again. But it's something that is already very close. And I think it would be lovely if we explore tonight together what are the ingredients and what is the taste of it. And then to see if enough people find the willingness, the courage, and the drive, and the motivation to create spaces where it can emerge. I think this is how many new levels of evolution emerge. They emerge somewhere, and at a certain level, they were stable enough to create a new reality, to create a new context, to create a new culture, in a way. Culture of cells, a culture of human beings, and something new that we maybe don't even have words for.
As you paint that picture, I find myself thinking of the experiments with collective intelligence that I do in my own teaching work, and that some of which we've done together when we've been in the same space. And I feel the electricity that can enter the space in which there's this very alive, present energy. Sometimes we need to begin by dropping in and speaking from the heart in a very sincere way and letting ourselves be seen in a very personal way. Sometimes there's a little bit of time of easing in, but when the space opens most fully, it's like the one being who is being all of us is almost visible in the shared space between us. And we always have the sense that this is very potent, that this can do a lot more than it has done so far. These forays into this new possibility feel incredibly important, although in some sense we're just innocently alive in it. We don't really know what's going to happen next, and yet the sense of charge and expectancy and possibility are very high. So I just want to invite you to talk about that and how that feels for you and what's feeling like it's happening. You know, perhaps, you know, Rupert Sheldrake talks about morphogenetic fields, a larger field out of where something in the larger collective field is making room for whatever new is arising. Is something changing even maybe since the last time we were together? Are you seeing something new emerge in this we, in this possibility? What's your sense of the peculiar aliveness that is making itself known right now?
Right. So I would say what we are talking about fundamentally is transcending a certain level of separation in order to join a fuller movement. So you and I, we had dialogues, and we had more of them, that were carried, that have been carried by a kind of a creative dimension, and it left the two of us with a very inspired feeling, and we both felt uplifted by the conversation. And it was just like everybody was bringing pieces of a puzzle into the room, and at the end we painted an image of something, and it feels very enriching and inspiring. And I believe that if we want to tap into this new level of we, which I believe is a much higher collective intelligence than what we call at the moment collective intelligence, so that it's literally tapping into less interpersonal resistance, less interpersonal separation, more awareness to not just what I have to say, but also to the space in between us and to what you're hearing. So it needs a certain level of even competency or training or awareness and clarity to be able to emerge into this new level of we for the pioneers. I think in 100 years, this will not be anymore such a big deal, but now it is a big deal because it's new. It's something that is emerging, and it's not stable yet. And I believe I talk recently about two competencies. One is the competency of stillness, which is spaciousness, which is awareness, it's eternity, it's the fundamental underlying eternal playground of being. So I need to realize a certain amount of spaciousness in order to see more the structures that I'm identified with. So in the awakening process, this is a fundamental practice. And the second competency is the competency of movement. So once I am in life, once I'm living in a world where things happen, where I contribute, where I'm in relationships, where I do a certain kind of work in society, I am part of the principles of movement. And this means the more I realize that I am not a static particle, but I am a constant movement that's unfolding, I am an intelligence that is flowing, and that society is a movement and an intelligence that is developing, then development becomes a new ability of humanity. Innovation is not something that happens randomly. It happens randomly sometimes, but there are some people that practice this and become professionals in innovation. So that it's not random, it's something that we download. We are learning the downloading principle, and it becomes part of our lives. So there are people that it doesn't matter where they are constantly updating the surrounding and themselves in the surrounding by bringing new ideas, new ways of doing things, new ways of resolving conflicts, living relationships, whatever. So how can we become this kind of active, innovative movement wherever we are influencing society, wherever we are living our lives, I think is one part. And the other part is, how can I live so intensely and so online that I stop talking about things and I learn to talk online out of them? And I think all of the ingredients that I said now are ingredients that we will need in order to turn on the volume of intensity of living in order to pop into this new dimension of we. Because otherwise we stay in a bit of a better version of the we that we know. And the we that we know is a collection of separate beings in a space. But this is not the we I'm talking about. I'm talking really about a fundamental new experience of life. And we are all part of it. But there will be a new dimension to it. And I believe that this is also the intelligence that we will need, because in this new we, because we are not so separate anymore, our collective intelligence is much higher, because we are able to process information much faster. And this means that we will need this state of consciousness to somehow solve some questions that we have at the moment about resources and all the global warming, all the global questions that we have, I think, need a new level of approach. And I think that this is part of the answer.
And as I have entered into this, I've come into an aliveness and a sense that something bigger than me begins to speak through me, that has an intelligence that's bigger than my own. But at this stage of things, it is full of promise, but not any, you know, I have not seen any collective intelligence exercises where we've actually solved a problem in global, we haven't addressed global warming or other of these practical issues. For the most part, at this stage, it seems like we're filling out the possibility of the field itself so that we can become conversant and allow it more and more fully. Do you feel that we're ready at this point to begin to use it in a way that lets that higher intelligence begin to solve practical problems, or is that something that will unfold later?
I think that the new level of evolution is something that emerges at a certain level of intensity, presence, clarity, love, compassion, and so on. So in the moment it emerges, it's ready to do it. Before it emerges, it's not ready. And that's very simple. So when we are in longer retreats, we see that the group is raising and raising and raising its awareness, its frequency, its vibration. And at a certain level, things become much easier. It took much longer in the beginning. It becomes much easier. And by the time the group is so intense that there is such a high, let's say, even intimacy, but intimacy with life and presence, that new things are suddenly possible. And many people in the room are aware of the fact that something changed. And I think in the moment it arises, new abilities, new ways of thinking, new ways of feeling, new ways of seeing the world are naturally there. But if we, let's say, go out of the intense container and we go back to our lives, many people experience that something in a way disappears again, and then it is a memory. So when we are in the memory of the state, we are not ready. Even if we already experienced it once, and we come back to a kind of an older version of life, it's not possible to solve something because it's just a memory. It's not online the thing. But if it's online the thing, it should be able to do it. So a group of people, when they pop into this kind of elevated state, they should be able in this state to come up with, let's say, good stuff to these burning questions. But the second stage is, the first stage is the realization, and the second stage is how to manifest this realization into something that is more stable, that will stay longer, and that will create structures in consciousness that will be able to host and be a home for this new stage of consciousness, which means we will find out ways how to live together in this, how to do business in this, how to educate children, and how to do teachings in this, and. So new structures will need to emerge, but they can only emerge if at least a certain amount of people can stay more stable in this state of consciousness. So I think it needs both. But it's for sure a lovely experiment. And I think so often in history we have seen that there are pioneers that went to some adventure and they didn't know what will come out from it because nobody before did it really. And then they came back with an answer in a way. And I think we need to come back with an answer and to just do the experiment, even if we don't know really where we are going. Because this is the nature of every new step of evolution or human development, is that we don't know what we are developing into because it's above our ceiling of awareness. And if it's above my ceiling, I don't see it. I can just say, yes, I'm going there, wherever it is.
So there are a number of things that are, this is such a rich conversation. I want to make sure that anyone who's listening to this who maybe just really hasn't experienced this particular thing, hasn't been in a seminar or a group where this kind of collective intelligence has even happened, what is it that they can do to develop the kind of competence that it takes to actually participate in this kind of a field? And to what degree can they participate even right now listening to us in a way that exercises those same muscles that they would be building in the process of developing the competence to be a part of this new we?
Right. So all I can share is my experience of the last 10 years of teaching and running many, many workshops, is that I, as you know, I believe that we are living in a gross reality, in a subtle reality, and in an unformed reality, and that everything that appears in the gross reality has, in a way, a kind of an informational field, which we call subtle energies, that are always available, and that we can always have access to, like in the internet. You have, if you know the web address of something, you type it into your browser and you are on the website. For me, every human being is working in the same way. Every human being has a cosmic address. And if I know the cosmic address, I can log in and I can look at the website of this human being. So it means that there is every human being for me radiates the whole information to the past, present, and future into the room. And the appropriate information, not an informational overload. It's not necessary to have an overload to see everything, to be aware of the appropriate information, which means when we are communicating with each other, there are so many times that you see people communicating and overlooking the essential information and talking about things that are not essential. So many people in the groups ask questions, but the question is often not what really has been asked. So if I'm aware of the symptom that we are talking about, and I learn the ability to connect, to listen deeply. So one thing is that I open myself to learn to listen. Because if I cannot listen, and listen doesn't just mean physical listening, listening means to listen with my whole heart and to receive someone and let it fully in. Because if I let it in, the deeper I can let somebody in, the higher will be my clarity. Because less my own filters will interfere with the information that comes from the person. So when I practice this, I create, when you are aware of the appropriate information that comes out from me, and I am aware of the appropriate information in you, then we create an intense field between each other, and we will immediately spot, let's say, the symptoms and talking about symptoms, and we will, let's say, invite each other to a deeper and deeper and deeper intensity of authenticity and clarity and the essential information. And I think that this will be a revolution in our communication, because even, as I say often, it's a very simple example, but it's, I think, a very powerful example. If you go into a conversation and you go out with a lower energy, you know you missed something. Because you're not supposed to be more tired, more exhausted, more disillusioned when you go out from a conversation. Something happened on the way. But often we don't know what happened on the way because we missed it. We just feel that we're a bit more drained or more tired. If this happens, my competency of movement, my competency to live my life, was not high enough to get the dynamic of the moment. So if we talk about an awake life, we talk about being awake to what's happening. And I think these are very simple practices. It sounds very simple that, for example, listening and communication and the subtle information of communication is important. It sounds very simple. But it's actually like a martial art. It's like something that you can refine and refine and refine. And by that, living on the marketplace of life where we communicate and relate the whole time, it's very important as a competency. I even say often something very confrontational. I say, listen, if you go to your holidays because your batteries are empty, you're not supposed to go to a holiday. You're supposed to look at your life. Or you go to meditate. Some people say, oh, I need to meditate again because I feel so drained. If you feel drained, you're not supposed to meditate more. You're supposed to get more clarity into your day-to-day life because there is not enough competency to live the life. So even by meditating, we might strengthen the escape mechanism of some people to take care of their lives. And if we know this, then we will learn, oh, there is a competency how to live our lives in the action, like in movement. And the meditation retreat is a retreat to deepen our spiritual awareness. And this will enhance each other, of course. So The simple exercises is, because when we are online with each other, we are not anymore talking about each other, but we are literally tuned in and aligned with each other, then we create such an intensity. And if a group practices this, being online with each other, there is, and we call each other if we are not here, then the intensity of a whole group container becomes very, very strong. And if it's very strong, then the unconscious level of life needs to reduce itself because it cannot stay as much unconscious when we become more conscious. Something doesn't work here. So a lot of stuff will come up, unconscious material, but also this is the fuel for the rocket to go to a new altitude. And I think that there is a process of integration necessary. There's a process of downloading and connecting to the future, which means the future is not tomorrow, but the future is the potential that we develop into. If tomorrow is a different tomorrow than today, like a more developed tomorrow. Otherwise, tomorrow is just a recreation of today. And so we need a competence to integrate parts that are not online, to get the intelligence online, to connect to and be more motivated bit by bit by the future, and to create a container of transcendence. And I think if we practice this and we really take it into our lives and we make it a 24-hour practice, which is a sign that I make awakening my priority, then something will fundamentally shift in our lives. If there is a decision for this priority, the life will not anymore be the same. Because I will change from being a user. I call it often being a user. If people look at their laptops and they look at the surface, OS 10 or Windows, then we are users. You know, we are users of the computer. But there are people who program the computer that are already much farther than the current OS 10 on my Mac. So if I become actually someone, people who look at personalities, if I look at Terry as a person, I'm constantly relating to the past, because Terry as a person is the past. But Terry as a creative movement that appears in this moment is now. And I need to relate to you now, not to the past, because otherwise I'm a user of reality. So, and I think there are many, many practices that have been developed throughout thousands of years of human evolution that are very valid, and we are still developing new ones that we can use to intensify our lives, and by this to invite a new level of emergence.
Yes, exactly so. And I mean, this has been part of some of our past conversations in which I've talked with you about the nature of the integral spiritual practice that I teach, and we've discovered an awful lot of congruence there, and the sense that dedicated daily spiritual practice in every moment of life with an integral orientation and with an awakeness to the kind of freedom and love and openness that you've just been invoking and describing has the potential, perhaps over a longer period of time, to really deepen people. And that's been one of the inspiring possibilities I've felt in our friendship and collaboration. Not just the aliveness of our own relationship, you and I, but the synergies of the kind of comprehensive dharma that integral spiritual practice represents as a foundation for a daily practice that holds the whole of life, all its ups and downs and ins and outs, and the remarkable transmission of this spacious freedom that you bring so beautifully, and to do this with an evolutionary context informed by integral principles feels like a way to dance on this opening edge where we don't know what will happen next, where I don't even know what I'm going to say next, where the presence of that larger intelligence is having a chance to find its way into words and into form and into the we space, perhaps in ways that can advance this emergence in some respects in ways that have never existed before.
Yes, beautiful. I think it's this is spot on what you said. I like very much what you said, that we start talking and we don't know what we are going to say. So I often say in the groups, if you live your life and you feel more often, maybe more often a day even, inspired and surprised by what you are saying, that this is a very, very good sign. Because if we all become like spacious enough to let a higher intelligence come through, which means sometimes only drops of inspiration, but sometimes you hear yourself speaking and you say, wow, what was this? And it's new, it's fresh, it's not premeditated, you didn't think about it before, it's just coming. And it fits in the context, often it hits the point of a situation or of a conflict or of a new way how to do things, and suddenly it's coming and it feels fresh and online. And I think we all need to become, in a way, a living example of how it feels to allow this higher intelligence through, up to the moment that our practice brings us to a point that more and more the whole day, what we are saying comes from this place, which in the Kabbalah tradition, in the Jewish tradition, is what they call becoming one with the Creator. It's becoming one with the creative force of the universe, with the evolutionary impulse. It's becoming one when God says, and it shall become light. Then these words were meant, if you're one with the Creator, what you speak is creation online. It's not, you're not speaking about reality as a reflection, you're speaking reality. And speaking reality has a very strong transmission because it's creative. It's creativity online. And I think that this is a very high spiritual practice. So how can we more and more a day live in this alignment with this creative force of the universe? Because this is literally very, very powerful. And so the competence of movement actually will align us back with this ability, and then we also stop talking about people, but we will talk out of them. And this is a very big difference. I'm not reflecting someone in myself and creating an opinion, because my opinion about Terry is irrelevant. It's so uninteresting because it's just wired by thousands of years of evolution, and it's not original. What is original, if I'm attuned to what creates Terry, and I can speak from this, this is original. And if Terry tunes in with what creates Thomas, so we are actually aligned with a creative force. And I think then we will live lives that are inspired by the future more than inspired by the past. And this is a real jump in spiritual evolution. And it's also a real jump in co-creating a culture that is not, that doesn't need any more crisis to update itself. Because many steps in culture are being made by crisis or by a pressure to evolve. But why do we need a pressure? Because we didn't listen to the call to evolve when it happened. And then more and more pressure arises. So I think that this is also an interesting field to explore. How can development happen in a way fluid and not just in steps that need a pressure in order to push us forward? And I believe that wisdom is very much related to that you move when you're called to move. Not when somebody pushes you from the chair.
And as we sit here right now in a world in which when we turn on the news, we hear about all kinds of crises and threats, supposedly the kinds of pressures that force humanity to move, there's still perhaps a possibility for us, just as we are in a very positive way attracted forward into the fullness of our own consciousness and our own happiness and our own open hearts and our own open intelligence and our widest field of awareness and our love and our communion with each other and with spirit, we can be attracted into the possibilities of addressing maybe I want to say it more concretely. We're right now. I'm attracted to how I can hold these important questions even more fruitfully. How we can come together even more dynamically. How the framings of our mind can open up in a new way, and we can anticipate opportunities and begin to actualize them in ways that no one would have thought of, and I can be standing in that possibility field as a conduit through which the possible finds its way into life.
I think that it's, of course, that if we are living in a world when we turn on the television and we see a lot of crisis, then this is the reality that we are living in. So what I described before is a very high spiritually evolved, or not only spiritually, a very high evolved culture that we can move towards. And I think that actually crises are actually very useful and necessary times in our life, because a crisis is nothing else than the collapse of certain structures that are not anymore contemporary and that need to collapse in order to allow space for something new to arise. Same as artists. Artists, good artists, are cracks in society. So cracks, open cracks in society that allow new air to come through, is often created by art, so that it creates a space where movement can happen. And I think that you also see the level of development of people when there is a crisis. I think it's a very good time to see who are the people who are really contributing, or who are the people who are contracting into themselves more. So who are the people who are going into a regression, into more safety, and who are the people who feel called to a new level of contribution, because we know that the only way to solve a crisis is a developmental step, and is a step into life, not into a regression. And so therefore I totally relate to what you say, that now we are being called to a higher contribution that will download in a way a new potential through us. And even if we don't, I believe wisdom is not that we always know what's the answer, but we have found ways how to be a gateway for an answer to appear. And I think in these times we need to have a lot of gateways in different fields that will download the answers that we don't know, because also we don't need to know, because we don't need to reach a certain image of perfection. We just need to be open enough to allow the answers to come through when we need them. And now we need a lot of answers, so we need a lot of circumstances that can allow these answers to come through. And I think this is genuine, original creativity. And I'm very thrilled by every context that allows this, however what this context practices, that it becomes a living, updating context. And so here we are, and this is what we are doing, 2012.
You know, a lot of my conversations on this series have had to do with outward forms of activism, and they range from people. I talked with John Hagelin, who's teaching lots of, he's involved with the David Lynch Foundation, which has taught thousands and thousands of school children in the United States to meditate as a part of their basic curriculum. And then I've talked with other activists who are working to, well, some people who've worked with the Occupy movement, others who've worked, you know, in protest, and others who work practically to create new laws and new change government policies. Some who are activists environmentally, particularly around global warming or around other key resource issues. There are so many examples of terrible suffering and imbalance and injustice and pain around the world, and many people, as they awaken, feel a heart of compassion. They want to do something, and we are feeling that there's a crisis that's larger, and we need to do something. And you've done a lot to try to heal the obvious dark energy in the field of people in the German-speaking countries because of the what remained from the Holocaust. I think, hopefully, you know, in part to liberate the positive leadership that the German-speaking people can bring in this particular moment. I'm curious, as you come to the United States in this year, 2012. It's an election year. The Occupy movement is happening. There's a great sense of tumult and change. What is the way that your impulse toward practical activism is feeling most alive? What is the more the forward direction of how these field effects can find their way right now into life in practical terms?
So, first of all, I promote a lot with all the people that come to my events, my trainings, and are associated with this kind of movement, that the what I call the service in the world, like that our spiritual insights, our developmental insights, our everything that we discover in this on this path needs to manifest itself somehow in the world. So we need to learn to embody it. So one part that I see very crucial is that we literally look how can we embody even the integral world. The integral world is a beautiful map of reality, and now it's time how can we literally manifest integral consciousness in our up down to our cells, and by this create in a way an integral reality around us. And one way how manifestation happens is also in participation and contribution. And I think one of my strengths is to in a way connect to the, let's say, core or the essential power or the essential intelligence of systems or people or groups or institutions, and to look where this evolutionary intelligence wants to develop into. So I see myself very much facilitating groups or movements that are in a way manifesting a lot in the world, and to look at the process and the download of these new parts in reality. But concretely speaking, I think it's very important that we translate, because the part of manifestation of a new consciousness is that we literally engage. And I think that only what can be really manifested is real. And because many people talk about spiritual concepts, but once they are in stress, once they are in crisis, once their things are not working the real way, it's very shaky with this kind of consciousness. And I'm very happy to see and be part of and to connect and create webs with people that are literally manifesting these things. And I think we are living in a time where the people that manifest from a certain development need to be connected in a web that becomes a new structure in consciousness. So there's a very powerful, there's something very powerful about connection. So what we do now and what you do with your series and what many other people also do is to create webs of connections and not be a solo fighter, but to really connect and create a web of intelligence that manifest things. And I'm very much interested in this web, so how people who come from a certain level of consciousness can combine forces in a way, and by this to create systems, institutions, structures that are simply more functional, and by being more functional will become attractive to other levels to move forward vertically. And so if any form of activism is not anymore inspired by two things, the one thing is ideas about life, which are not so applicable for reality, because once we try to implement them, some of the activists return after some time and say, oh, I'm so tired, I'm burned out, I'm I feel that I do a lot, but it's not really moving forward. So if this kind of activism already contains a level of not seeing, because if you're an activist, you are not supposed to be burned out after some, or even after some short time. So how can we live a kind of activism that is aligned with life, that is aligned with the evolutionary power of a system? And I think the new leadership that is emerging, these are leaders who are able to listen to the intelligence of an evolving system. And being it politicians, being it company leaders, being it NGO leaders, or being it therapists or doctors, we need to learn to have the ability to listen to the evolutionary intelligence that is anyway there. And why it's anyway there? Because we are already in movement. Once we are born, we are already in movement. So when we are already moving, there is already an impulse within us that drives our lifetime, and we need to learn to listen to this impulse and become this impulse, become this movement. So the leader of tomorrow, or the politician of tomorrow, or the therapist of tomorrow, is one that listens to the core potential of a system, an individual, or a whole state, or a whole world. And if we learn these abilities, then our activism is actually just, we become the mouth and the arm and the thought of this evolutionary force to manifest. And this will mean that we are not anymore coming from our separation to put a new idea onto life, but we literally come out of life. We are just the voice of life. So we are not active. There's not activism from separation. It's activism out of the genuine force that's anyway moving. And it uses my voice and my tongue and your voice and your tongue just to speak, and your hands to do and to act. And I think this is the second tier, this is the new level of activism that is actually in alignment with the evolutionary or the developmental impulse that is happening. And this evolutionary impulse is as it is in every human being, which means that we co-create a potential-oriented culture. It is also in every institution, it's in every company, it's in every big concern. And so once I have the ability to listen to this, magics happen. Why magics happen? Because I just facilitate the original movement, which is effortless because it anyway wants to happen, and I just help to create a context for it. So I think this is a beautiful way how to relate to life.
Absolutely. I feel the future that wants to manifest alive in this field right now, asking me, asking all of us, asking this field that we are speaking out of to help it find its way into form through us. And right. Often, I think, in my own life lately, I feel that when very complex situations arise that are not so easy to discern what the right path forward might be, it's by tuning in to the call of that evolutionary future that's wanting to find its way into form that I find the alignment out of which the flow returns, and I know what to do, and I'm in action then. It's not even a knowledge. It's funny, our language is all full of subjects and objects, and all of that implies a kind of separation and atomization of separation. But in the mode that you're invoking and that we're all learning, I think, now to attune to and to participate with, it's not like that. The prior unity that we all are already is finding its way into action through us, and there's not a separated subject and object and intention and method so much as a single flow. And that
right.
That expression that you just offered brings that forth so beautifully. I'm really moved. Thank you.
Oh yeah, I think that's exactly it. That separation disappears more and more, and we become living movements that channel this. And I think that this is the when we talk about leadership or wisdom, I think exactly what you said. It's not that we are not running anymore into difficult situations, but it's the way how we deal with it, and it's the way how we also allow unclarity to be part of it. I think the great leaders are not the ones that always have answers. The great leaders are the ones that know how to be there when there is no answer.
Mm.
So when there is a space of unclarity, how you can contain this, or in crisis situations like now, I think the future leaders, or the leaders that are the future leaders already now, these are the ones that contain the crisis, that contain the shakiness, that contain the chaos that might be frightening, that are able to handle their own existential fear and still be there. You know, not that they have no fear, that they are able to contain it and to still listen to this calling. And this is a high spiritual practice. If I practice this all my day, I will become better and better in this. It will become easier and easier. That I can, even if I don't know, there's a kind of a difficult situation, and I learn to relax into the situation, even if I don't know where it's going to. Even if you are the head of a big company, and sometimes you will not have answers, but you have the ability to rest in the unclarity. In the Tao Te Ching is written, do you have the patience to wait until the mud settles and the water is clear? So if there is no clarity, it's perfect as long as we allow that there is no clarity. And by allowing it, we open the gateway to this high intelligence to come through. And when it's time, it will come through. And I think that this is a, because people often have the demand on themselves to be perfect. And I don't think this perfection exists. It's just an illusion of our mind. But the ability to be in these situations and the way how to learn to be there is part to be a future leader. And I think that this is a beautiful addition to what we said before.
Mm, gorgeous. I want to just keep diving in, but we're a little beyond the one-hour mark. So, and I know that many of the folks listening live online right now have questions for you. And I have a few important announcements. So if you have a question for Thomas or me, simply send your question by typing it in the instant teleseminar window on your computer. And if you phoned in, please press *2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Now, Thomas, can you tell us a little more about how people can learn more about your work? I know that you have a website, Thomas Hubel, and that's spelled thomashubel.com/en if you want to read it in English. The regular website is in German. That's your main website. And then I notice, looking at it myself, if you click events, you can see those of us in the United States who are listening right now, he's here in America. This is 2012, up until about April 7th. With events in New York City, the San Francisco Bay Area. He'll be speaking Tuesday in Berkeley, in Olympia, in Seattle, in Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada, in Boulder, Colorado, and he'll be going back to New York. So you can find out that schedule. And then what are the other things you want to make people aware of while, you know, that are curious to know more about you and your work?
I think one big thing is the Celebrate Life Festival. So we create every summer this kind of consciousness event in the north of Germany that this year for the first time will be live streamed. We had amazing speakers already contribute, Ken Wilber, Byron Katie, Barbara McHubbard, Terry Patton, Diane Hamilton, and many others. So there was, and this will happen in July, and there is also a website, it's called Celebrate -life.info. And then there is another thing, it's our academy, it's the Academy of Inner Science, it's innerscience.info, and it's the academy where we run our 3-year training programs and where we also build kind of research circles, as we call them, or study circles. One is consciousness and business, consciousness and education, and consciousness and medicine and therapy. These are the three main ones. new ones are evolving, but they are not yet there. And so these are professional people in the different fields that are interested in, let's say, new levels of consciousness and how they contribute to these various fields. Yeah, I think that's it for now. That's the essence.
Okay, great. Thank you, Thomas. If you're interested in my work, I will be offering a 5-day deep experiential seminar at Hollyhock Farm in British Columbia, Canada, from June 15th to 20th. And it's exciting for me to go deep for a more sustained period of time. So please check that out. You can find that at my website, integralspiritualpractice.com. And please stay on the line. At the end of this call, I'll tell you a little more about what's going to be coming up with our upcoming guests. I have a lot to tell you there. Briefly, in 2 weeks, on April 8th, I'll be talking with Peter Bauman, author of Ego, the book, and organizer of the remarkable Being Human conference that took place just yesterday in San Francisco. And at the end, we'll open up the line so we can hear some of each other's voices as we say goodbye. Okay, let's take a look at what's happening with the questions that folks may have asked. There's quite a few live voices with their hands up, and quite a few questions typed in as well. Well, let's begin with a live caller. I don't know your name, but you're the only one with your hand up with a phone number from Atlanta, Georgia. So I've just unmuted you. Please introduce yourself.
Good evening. This is Joe Garofalo from Atlanta, Peachtree City.
Hi, Joe.
Good evening. I appreciate the talk, and I thoroughly appreciate the work of both of you. So integral theory postulates that reality, the tetra arises. In other words, it's an all-quadrant affair. And I've listened to talks by Ken Wilber claiming that the lower right-hand quadrant sometimes leads change. So I was wondering if the two of you would be happy to go through all four quadrants. In other words, this particular talk has been about the we space. But what I'm wondering, could you give attention to the other three quadrants also?
Okay, Thomas, you want to lead off?
Maybe start you and I will add something.
Thank you.
Well, for those of you who aren't familiar with the quadrants, I'll explain them. The idea is essentially that reality, we tend to think of reality and talk about it usually in just from one or two of these four fundamental dimensions. There's an interior and an exterior. There's the interior of my inner life or our inner experience, the field of our mutual understanding. But then there's the exterior. You can't look at my thought, but you can measure the brainwaves and stuff, and you can see my behavior. That's the exterior. And then some things happen, are best understood in their individuality and in their parts. Like if we dissect an animal, we can see all the neurons and pathways and blood vessels, and we can understand how it ticks by looking at the parts, the individuality. But there are other dynamics that are systemic, that can only be seen by seeing things collectively. So we've been really talking about our spiritual lives and our spiritual intentionality as a group and how that can create changes, how we can come to a different consciousness, and together we can enact things that can have practical effects in the exteriors, the so-called right-hand quadrants. And I think, Joe, you're kind of asking us if we're feeling that something new is able to manifest from the right to the left, you know, like, or are you just suggesting, because the activism that we've already talked about would obviously involve different behaviors, and they might involve new institutions and systems. So I think it would spill over to the right naturally in that way. But you're suggesting maybe some of it could happen spontaneously right there on the right side. Is that right?
Yes, yes. In other words, once we raise this collective consciousness to this new we space, then I would suppose that behaviors would change, that systems would change, that, you know, by changing my consciousness and tapping into a larger consciousness. You know, the other thing I saw on your website, Thomas, you have a meditation, I guess, once a month, where people try to meditate at the same time?
Right, that's right, yes. It's the first and the third Tuesday in a month, yes.
So how many people are on a call like that? I mean, a few hundred, a few thousand? I'm just curious, I'm saying, what have you seen rise out of that?
Yes, we are not doing it with a call. Actually, this meditation happens without any communication device. So we just, everybody is invited to sit down at the same time. It's 9 o'clock Germany time in the evening. And it's we all tune in. So there's a short introduction to this on the website. And then you just tune in and focus on the field. And then we do this kind of transmission for 45 minutes. And we got very lovely responses from people. And sometimes we direct this meditation to certain, let's say, issues or certain areas on the planet where it might be very helpful to get this, let's say, energy or information into to create a change. And there's a lovely experiment that's happening there. But we don't do it with a conference call.
So it's just people individually just at that particular time. I'm wondering, so have you seen any change because of that? You know what I'm saying? Like measurable change.
I mean, it's always difficult to say that it happens because of this or it happens not because of this. I mean, I just got some positive feedback from people and individuals and also sometimes groups, because in Germany there are a lot of practitioner groups, or in Austria, Switzerland, that do actually their evenings with a practitioner group, and then they sit all together and they do this download meditation, and also in other places. So what we sense into is the intensity of a field that is happening, and for some people it's simply very beneficial. They experience like a very strong and deep meditative state that sometimes it's harder for them to access when they are alone, when they are meditating without the field. But for some other people it brings up a lot of intensity and also even stuff, unintegrated stuff that comes up through this meditation. And some people experience it as a healing space, or some people get some insights. And sometimes we do it for, let's say, conflict areas. And of course there is sometimes a change afterwards, but I don't allow myself to say it was because of this. Maybe it's just a good contribution. You know, this is hard to tell. But things start moving. But it's always hard to say it was just because of this, because reality is very complex. But it's I think that if enough people come together and they join a kind of a common alignment, that we will do this in the future even more, that we will literally work, let's say, with collective stuff, with collective tools, and that we will also learn how to work with some global things, with this kind of inner technologies, much more efficiently. And I think many, also around the planet, many groups are experimenting with this kind of synchronized fields, because a synchronized field is a very strong, let's say, base for a higher intelligence to be downloaded. And what is a higher intelligence? It's a higher awareness or a higher possibility of the same situation. And if we learn to work with this, that we are actually becoming, in a way, an open window for a higher possibility to come through. And this open window is a shared collective space, an intersubjective space. Then we actually become a field that updates a certain issue or a certain conflict or a certain, or brings even a new ability into humanity. And I believe that we will in the future experiment more and more with this ability that we have as a we, as a collective structure.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, John, and thank you, Thomas. That was very rich. There are a flood of questions coming in, Thomas, so I'm going to take another live question right away since there are quite a few hands in the air. This one is from a telephone registered to Rhonda St. Croix in Ottawa, Ontario. I'm not sure if this is Rhonda, but welcome.
It is. Thank you so much. This is incredible. I'm just loving this conversation. So inspiring. And I hope, I apologize if my question, I was listening by webcast earlier and I was the sound was cutting out, so I hope I didn't miss this. But it's on the subject of what you're talking about, you know, being that gateway for the higher intelligence. And sort of in that regard, I was so curious about the structures in consciousness, Thomas, that you were talking about. And I wondered, as you were talking about, you know, building these structures in consciousness, I think I heard, you know, to be the home for that higher intelligence coming through. You know, the
right.
image I got as you were talking about that was almost like structures being pathways, or I was just picturing, you know, these pathways through the heart somehow. But I wondered if you could say more about that. My sense is that, you know, the structures are many-dimensional or many-leveled, you know, mental, physical, spiritual, of course. Can you say more about the structures?
Yes.
Thank you.
That a human being, when I relate to a human being as a personality, I'm actually relating, in my perspective, to the past. So this is already a crystallized structure to a certain state of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So when people go to a workshop and they experience like an opening, they experience a new state
mm-hmm.
that they didn't experience before. So when they go back home, they go back home into a different context, a context that actually doesn't match this new insight.
Mm-hmm.
So then there are two possibilities. The breakthrough was so fundamental that it's so incorporated already that when the human being comes back, it will create an equivalent structure in consciousness
mm-hmm.
that allows this human being to live that way.
Mm-hmm.
And once we live that way, we are living in the reality that matches this insight. So
mm-hmm.
for some people, when they are in their spiritual development, they experience a kind of a peak, but then they live their lives on a different level again. So
mm-hmm.
they come back to the former level of consciousness with a bit of an addition. And with a good memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we manage to stabilize our lives on a higher level of consciousness, it's only possible if I create a structure, which means if I create my intimate relationships like this, if I create my working environment like this, if I create my relational network like this, if I create in a way the ways, my nutrition and everything else that I need for a stabilized life like this. So then it means I had a realization in the mystical traditions. We are talking a lot about realizing something and then manifesting it.
Mm-hmm.
And these are two things. The realization is not yet the manifestation. So therefore, when we say, okay, many people read books about higher consciousness and about whatever, and then many people talk about it because intellectually mm-hmm. it makes sense, but their life don't look like this.
Mm-hmm.
And this means it's not a state of consciousness, it's an idea or a cognitive understanding of it, which are two things. So to create a structure means that we started to embody it. And once it's embodied, it's my reality. So reality for me is a fluid matter that fits to the state of consciousness and my energy. So I will meet people that will somehow resonate with my energy, and I will not meet people that don't resonate with this.
Mm.
So we often meet people that, so now we discovered, okay, the integral field are people who read a lot of books maybe about it, were very inspired by it, and then you meet people that see it very similar like you, and then we create a field, and then we all say yes in a way that this value system is a good value system. And then we have a shared context. And the shared context will become, maybe, If it's an on context, it will become the context of the future of the mainstream of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so this will become a new structure because we all share this new context, and the more people that join, the more it will manifest itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the integral understanding will need to manifest that we will create relationships that are like this, we will create companies like this, educational systems and so on, until we literally live in it. And when we live in it, we will not fall back into something else if we are integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we say, okay, now this is a new state of consciousness that it literally became a reality on the planet.
Wow,
does this make sense?
It does. That's beautiful. That exactly was what I was trying to see, that roadmap, and you've laid it out so beautifully. Thank you.
Okay, great. I'm happy. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Rhonda.
Okay.
I want to ask a question that we've got a lot. We have more questions than we'll have time for, alas. A lot of really rich ones, too. But this one especially catches my eye. Mark Jacobs in Santa Fe asks, such an emerging consciousness has already created chaos and confusion for so many. I feel it's their invitation to stop and turn within for new answers and new directions. But I've had to learn to face myself on every level, emotions, feelings, emptiness, stories, histories, and feel long repressed emotions before I was able to allow an expansive space for future potential. Do you believe this kind of self-examination is necessary for transcendence individually and collectively? And this actually reminds me of another question that was asked by Ernest in Oakland about how aspects of this resemble psychotherapy, and he's kind of asking how is it, what makes it different, I think, was the thrust of that question.
Yes. I think that we will always need to be careful that we are not mixing levels. So we need to see that a strong change or a crisis that induces a change will definitely also trigger unintegrated parts. So we need to see if there is things that it triggers on the let's say more grown up level of ourselves, but it also triggers unintegrated parts, which more for the therapeutic level of life. So how do we integrate within the crisis also the unintegrated parts that which will overshadow? So these parts, the unintegrated parts, will overshadow the reality that I'm seeing. So the reality that I'm seeing is 2012, let's say, in a certain crisis moment. But then all the past in me that is unintegrated will be projected onto this crisis. So if this happens, of course I will need to go through this, because this is what comes up for me. So I will need to have the right tools, the right context, and the right knowledge maybe, and the right courage to go through this stuff that will come up through the crisis. But if I'm integrated, I will not have a movie on top of the movie. So I will not have a projection of my past onto the current situation, which may make it easier. So in some situations, a crisis triggers, or when people break up in relationships, or when something happens in people's lives, which they call a crisis or a difficult situation, mostly it will trigger shadow material or unintegrated parts. And then the therapy side of life will come into the game, because we will need certain tools, and there are many tools out there, and they will be refined and they will be even better, so to integrate this stuff. And I think in a very integral development, we know that this is simply part of life, and we also know, as very responsible, let's say, beings, we know that we will have to take care of this stuff if it comes up, because the suppression will just recreate the pattern. So we will know, if this comes up, it's necessary, and we will learn how to not to take care of this. There is no excuse anymore, because there are many opportunities out there, and if I really want, I will find the right context how to take care of this stuff. So yes, with one word, yes, it's very important, and crises often trigger very fundamental existential unintegrated parts, and it's just an invitation that there is a crisis means that there is a house with a foundation that is not solid, which means when my foundation of development is not integrated, it can break, which means I can go into a regression, and I will act and respond and think about the situations from a place that doesn't match my current age and my current development. And in the moment I know this, and in the moment I have an awareness of this, I will give everything to take care of this. So that the crisis is just an indicator for the integration. So the unintegrated part that called through this crisis for integration will be integrated, and I can move forward. And if we do this on a cultural level, on a society level, and we know that this is why there is a crisis, then I think we will get the point, and we will not need the same crisis again. If we need the same crisis again and again, it's a sign that we don't take care of the stuff that we need to take care of.
Okay, good. Thank you. I want to call on another live participant. This is someone who I don't have the name of, but you're calling from a phone in that's in a 206 area code, and you're live. Please introduce yourself. Hello? Perhaps you've muted yourself. I'm not hearing you. Hello? Okay. Oh, maybe you came on there. Try again. Well, we'll try a caller from Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Hello, you're on the air. 970 area code.
Hello.
Hello. You're live. Please introduce yourself. No. We have a lot of people who've raised their hands that I'm not getting.
Hello? Yes, I can hear you, but I cannot hear Terry anymore. So, I can hear you. Hello.
You can hear me?
I can hear you, yes, but I see Terry is talking, but I cannot hear him.
Hi. Yes, I think in the process of unmuting those folks, I got muted. Sorry.
Okay.
Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Please introduce yourself.
Oh. Hi, my name is Savannah Hawkins. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. And I've been involved in similar work for many years. And my current research kind of question at this time is talking about the field. What sense do we make out of all this new knowledge about the field for our lives and for society and for our cultures and, just the earth and everything. And I was wondering what your reaction might be to that question.
Mm. So one answer is that we will only know when we do it. So once we live it, actually, the answers will come by living it. Because if we are too separate to live it, then we will just give, in a way, ideas and answers that are still infused by the old way of doing things. So we can just anticipate, but it's the same like now I'm sitting in a hotel in New York City and I'm looking out from my window and I see something from New York. But if I would expect that this is New York, I simply miss the point because the window is much too small for the reality outside. So if I look from my current level of development to my next level of development, which I don't know yet, so then I will always look only through a window. This is the thinking and the feeling and the perception that I have at the moment. And this is not sufficient to describe the next level. So I need a portion of not knowing and humility in order to just become what I want to know. So this is the nature of development, I believe. But what else I think is in the next level of development is a speeding up of intelligence. So because of the separation, we also lose in a way a lot of energy in the interpersonal friction that comes from this separation. So if we transcend part of this separation into a new level of we, the intelligence and creativity that we can allow to come through and manifest will be much higher. So like how the question of global warming looks like in one level of development now will look very different in the next level of development. The abilities that we have to deal with it and the insights and the perceptions and the innovations that we will come up with will be also very different. And so I can just give myself to the process because I cannot fully know, but I think what we know is that the intelligence that we will have cognitively, emotionally, spiritually, and so on is much faster and is much higher. So we will process information much faster, which will give us a very big advantage in dealing with some of the collective issues. And I think if we are really interested in a culture that is potential-oriented, like in Germany, there are now very serious movements that want to change the education system from like a knowledge-based education to a potential-based education. It's a big thing that is happening. I believe that will create a lot of change, and that a potential-based society is for sure much more efficient than the former one. I think mm-hmm. this is as much as I can say now in these few minutes to this question. But
I was just going to add that I was thinking also along the lines of foundations and guidelines.
I'm sorry, there are so many folks waiting for questions.
I know, I just was throwing it out there.
Sure. Well, thank you for your question. All righty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are a whole series of questions that are quite similar that I'd like to surface here. Barbara in Klamath Falls, I'm going to read three questions that kind of connect, Thomas. She asks, how do you invite friends and family into deeper connection and intimacy, like you guys demonstrate in your YouTube videos and in this dialogue? And then Marissa in Petaluma asked about how there's often a passage through deadness that human beings go through. Is that just a lack of clarity and cloudiness that we should let be, or are you speaking mainly to those of us who are really ready? And if so, how does our participation in the field lift the whole global family, the folks who are really pretty stuck in a dead mode? And then Marcia from Colorado Springs says, please speak to the possibility of having this we communication with people of various levels, not just the most advanced.
Okay, so let's say something to this. How can I do it with family and friends? That's the first question. The first thing is that being awake means that we don't know people. In the moment you know your friends and you know your family, most probably we are asleep. So this means actually the hardest practice of wakefulness is actually with the people that are closest to us, because we have the tendency to create internal images of the people that we know, and then we relate more to this image than to the energy and the actuality that is really there. So how to invite people there is first to become awake to the fact that we need to relate moment to moment to moment to moment fresh and new and spontaneous. Which means that, let's say, people that come to me for groups already or that study with me for many years, on one hand, I have no idea who they are when they enter the room again. Because in the moment I know who they are, I don't relate to the freshness of what they bring with themselves. So with close people, it's actually very demanding to stay awake, because the tendency of my mind and my brain is actually to create a habit from the people that are close to me, and to incorporate this habit into my sense of self. And so I need to be very awake to not fall into this trap. This is the one thing. And the other thing is that the tool that we developed in the last year, which is called transparent communication, that we literally enhance our ability to perceive information while we communicate by far, means that I will make communication and relation an art. And the more I practice this, and this also relates to the other question, I can practice this with every level of development. It's basically, I can practice, if I'm skilled in it, the level of development doesn't matter really, because what matters is me being able to relate to what is there. And if this level of development A is there, so I will relate to A. And if I'm integrated and skilled enough, so I will be able to relate to this. And if level 5 is there, I will relate to level 5. It doesn't matter. It's like a fluid change of, it's a response to what is there. And but there is something even very awake and realized beings cannot create a new form of we, because a we means we. A we cannot be created alone. So there is a certain, let's say, community or net that you need in order to create a new level of value systems that is broader, more complex, wider, more open than the former one. And there is something that in the relational space in this level of consciousness and this new emergence that needs to be co-created intersubjectively. This means I need to have people in a certain level of development, otherwise I cannot create a new level of emergence. So this is also true. So one is that I will be more able to relate to all levels of consciousness, because I will not have so much preference and shut out some of them. And the other one, I need a certain level of development to create something that is like a pioneering emergence. So this, I think, is also true. And the second question, Terry, I think I don't recall anymore. What was the second one?
It had to do with lifting up the whole global family. If, you know, it seems like this is something for people at the leading edge, so can it really... How can we reach out to the whole global family, not just the people at the top? But I think you answered that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. We're really a little over time. I had wanted to ask you quickly one last question. I think
Yes. This
is from someone who has a little bit of familiarity with your work. This is from Paula in Perth. And she says, is what you're saying a description of recreating ourselves from the inside out, which I know you sometimes say?
Basically, yes. Basically, it's recreating ourselves. But ourselves, it's the question what we mean by that. Because ourselves changes by every new level of development that we step into. So myself might be my personality. Myself might be a bigger radius of awareness. Myself might include a global awareness. Myself might include a universal awareness. So myself is something that is also changing with every new level that I realize. And so, yes, it's true. And by changing, because if I work a lot with like the energetic component of our, if we are talking about being in life, then I talk a lot about energy, because I believe that many things in life happen according to energetic principles. So we talk about transcendence and eternity, and we talk about things that manifest. Once we are in a form, there is energy. So I believe that the inner energy and the core vibration of people, the core intelligence of people, is responsible for because what we send out is in a way what comes back. And if the people that we meet, we have a certain resonance with. And there are many people that you don't meet because the resonance is not there. And so we literally create reality around us in a way through our vibration, by having the friends that we are having, by choosing the work that we are choosing, by living in the context that we are living, by finding the spiritual community that we are living in. All this has a resonance with our inside. So by making these choices, we also create a context around ourselves, like a mini culture. And so the vibration and my state of consciousness and all my unintegrated parts will actually co-create the context that I'm living in. And suddenly I say, oh, this is my life. But once I have a new realization, or I integrate some unintegrated parts, also the context around me will start to change and adapt to the new level of consciousness that is there now. And by this we could say, yes, we're changing reality from inside out. But of course, the other way also works around, that the context influences also what's happening within me. So there is a kind of like a horizontal eight movement between the context and the inspiration of the context and my insight and the creation from inside out. So this is like a communication. And once I understand this communication, and I can literally follow how information comes in and how information goes out, and if both channels are open, or if one is more open than the other, then I can learn to work with it. And so I can reveal a lot of, let's say, stuck areas in my life by looking at this movement. And if this movement is in a balance, then I would say my inside is synchronized with my outside. Many people experience their inside not synchronized with the outside. There are many people that say, oh, I feel that I have this enormous potential, but the world somehow doesn't see it, it doesn't manifest, I cannot manifest it. It feels a bit stuck. So this means that the inside is not synchronized with the outside. And there are other people that say, I'm in a flow, which means that they have the feeling that their inside is represented in the life that they are living. So a healthy context is more and more synchronized, and we are more happy if we feel less gap and less tension between what's happening inside and what is literally shown outside. So the more they match, let's say the more happy or the more on track, the more in our mission, the more online we experience ourselves. And so there are good ways how to work with this and how to look why some people do not experience themselves in this synchronicity, which means also in this authenticity, so that inside and outside is really synchronized. Yeah, just in a few minutes, I think this is what I can say to this.
Yes. Well, thank you. We've taken a little extra time because there is a lot of excitement about this call, but we really are going to have to stop now. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Thomas. And before we all say goodbye and I tell you what's coming up next week, I want to remind you, Thomas's website is thomashuebl.com and then /en for the English language version. If you value what you're receiving here, please support our work by letting others know about it. They can register for this series at beyondawakeningseries.com. And you're invited to go to integralspiritualpractice.com to sign up for my personal mailing list and newsletter. And you'll also find out about my upcoming teaching events, including the 5-day seminar I mentioned from June 15th to 20th in British Columbia, Canada. You'll also see something about the Integral Community event that will be taking place in Colorado in August, and more, including Thomas and I have decided to join together to create a year-long program that won't be starting until this September, but we're really interested to go into this deeper work in a rich way. And those of you who are curious about that, make sure to sign up. You can sign up on my website easily enough. You'll get announcements, and we're very excited about that. Now, in 2 weeks, April 8th, at our regular time, 10 a.m. Pacific, I'll be in dialogue with the very clear intelligence of Peter Bauman, formerly of Tangerine Dream, now the author of the remarkable new volume, Ego, the Book, and the creator of the Being Human Conference. Then on April 29th, by popular demand, I'll be having my second interview with Candace O'Denver, the remarkable founder of the Great Freedom Teachings. And in May, I'll be talking with John Bunzel, the London-based integral activist who originated Simpal, a remarkable new approach to political activism that empowers local initiatives to have global impacts. Thank you, everyone, so much for joining us. Let's open up our phone lines now, and everybody, we can say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you,
very enriching.
Goodbye. Goodbye, everyone.